Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, and we're talking on this particular show about the Western Conference. I don't like to do preview podcasts, but Andrew Hahn makes me do them.
For some predictions, right?
Absolutely. Those are two of my favorite things, is predictions and previews. But the good thing about this is that we're all here together in Los Angeles in the same room. Appropriately, the hub of NBA basketball.
That's right.
That is Dave McMenamin, who covers the Lakers in the hub of NBA basketball here in Los Angeles. And coming out from Texas, as he always does, the one, the only, Ben McMahon. Still with us. Still with us.
Looking sharp, too.
Happy to be here, really? Boys.
I think he bought some new clothes.
Nordstrom Rack, baby.
Is that what they call drip?
It's drip adjacent, I think we'd say.
I refer to it as suburban dad swag.
I like it.
Ramona Shelburne will be joining us in a few minutes, hopefully. So we're in Los Angeles. We might as well start in Los Angeles. Dave, will the NBA trophy end in Los Angeles this year?
Ooh, so a prediction right off the bat.
No, I'm not asking for a prediction. You give me your thoughts.
I do think that the NBA Finals will have home games in Los Angeles.
Okay, that's a nicely well-constructed hedge.
I think the team that would be likely to do so, more likely to do so, would be the team that's never made the Finals in their team history.
I believe the Lakers have been in the Finals, so I'll deduce that you mean the Clippers.
Yeah, the team, the best roster with the ugliest jerseys in the league, the Clippers.
But they have a new court with brighter red and brighter blue or something like that.
They gotta not rebrand. I like the Clipper name, but
speaking of LA,
need new jerseys.
Here's Ramona.
Hey, everybody.
We just started Ramona.
I'm working on a big story.
Okay.
Sorry.
This is the hub of the NBA right now in LA. Will the
I certainly hope so, you guys. Dave, you and I have been in the basketball wilderness for a while. You went off to Cleveland while I had to endure many years of very bad basketball from the Los Angeles Lakers. And
you spent some time up in the Bay while that was happening, though.
That was like I still get like that. That was like the escape,
yeah.
Right? Like it was like, oh, like some of those. How long has it been? 6-7 years?
Since they made the playoffs.
It's crazy. You know, I listen all the time to people from the small markets, owners, general managers, you know, who complain about the small markets. But hello, the Knicks and the Lakers have been in the wilderness for a long time here. And I realize that those aren't
right. But look at the Lakers now. LeBron comes here not because of anything the Lakers did right, but because of location.
I agree.
Prestige. Well, then Anthony Davis follows him. The Lakers have managed to screw up everything they could possibly screw up. And here they are, gifted a contender because of the history and the location.
Okay, fine.
So
but
then
every
when you complain about small market versus big market, the Lakers are
well, the Cavs
perfect
won a
example.
Championship because LeBron was born in Akron. I mean, everybody has their pluses and minuses.
Good point.
All right, what about you Memphis? Sacramento?
I mean, we can go on. Jameis Wiseman goes to the University of Memphis, and it's not unfathomable that they could still end up with the number one pick next year.
They're lobbying.
And maybe they'll get Jameis Wiseman, and maybe he'll stay there his entire career because he's from there.
I heard LaMelo Ball's going to be the number one. I heard LaMelo Ball.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, we'll talk about that another time.
Another
time. So Dave was just saying, Ramona, that he thinks the Clippers are the favorite?
No, I think the favorite in the West.
Okay, favorite in the West.
Wow.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, look, they added two superstars and kept, in large part, the core of a very competitive team. Two superstars and by far the best bench in the league, you know, plus some nice complimentary role, you know, Patrick Beverley.
I know. They pushed the Warriors 6 games, and that was a damn good team that, like, nobody was expecting much out of, and they – I'll be curious to see how they fit together because that Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams pick and roll is like nobody can stop that. Like, you know it's coming and you still can't stop it. How does that get affected by Paul George and Kawhi on the court? How much are they going to just separate them?
Or
they
fun games. You know? One of my most memorable games from last season was that game in Golden State in the playoffs where they came back and Palmer's going crazy on the sideline and they just cannot stop Trez rolling to the basket. That's what you described. But I mean, they won the series.
But I agree. How does that the sixth and sixth, they got the two best six men in the league, which is mathematically impossible, but absolutely true.
And we all voted for both of them. How did we do that?
Whatever. Kind of... But name a better bench player. How does that duo, is it affected by the star power that came in? And then really the other big, big question about the Clippers is, when does Paul George play? How much time does he need to get back to being, Paul George that we saw before the shoulders quit on him last year? And how does that affect kind of the process of all those pieces coming together?
Yeah. Also, how much does Kawhi play? Yeah. And Dave, you just had a nice conversation with Lawrence Frank and Doc Rivers about this last week. How are they going to manage him? Load management year two?
Their messaging is that it's not going to be as extreme as what Toronto did last year quite successfully. I went back to, I think your reporting and Michael Wright's reporting on Kawhi when he was still in San Antonio. There's some belief that this could be a persistent chronic atrophy of what's going on with his body. And so if that, it would be irresponsible not to do some degree of extreme quote unquote load management if that is the case with his body. And so, the thing though I like about their team is that it's set up for plug and play beyond those two stars that came in. And when they do have their team fully functional, I don't think you're going to see the problem that Boston had last year where it was quote unquote too much talent to begin with, because they have role players in abundance versus, ascending stars in abundance.
Right.
What I think about the Clippers is when you walk into the building in the playoffs, assuming general health, you are going to have a hard time scoring on them.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And when I look at the Lakers, I worry about whether they're going to be able to defend at the level that they need to. Now, my thing about the Lakers is, yes, they missed out on some guys because of what happened with the chase for Kawhi. Mm-hmm. I actually think their roster is pretty well put together.
I mean, Danny Green was huge for them. They needed that nice complimentary 3-and-D fit. Last year they hadn't – it was just such a bad roster, bad fits around LeBron. Danny Green was a perfect fit for that roster.
I like some of the things that they did. You know who I like? Ramona, you know who I'm going to say. Alex Caruso.
Bald Mamba.
I think Alex Caruso, am I out of my mind? I think Caruso will be contributing to this team.
Absolutely.
Dave, I think there are going to be times when Frank Vogel is sitting there, he's looking at the bench and saying, I'm going to play Alex Caruso ahead of Rondo.
Well, I agree. I don't think it's going to be at the start of the year.
Think that Alex Caruso, in that wasteland that happened in the last month of last season, where LeBron shut it down and they were just, doing whatever. Alex Caruso was the shining star.
Here's a hot take for you. He may be the second most athletic player on the Lakers behind LeBron James.
Anthony Davis is a decent athlete, sir.
I'm standing by AC.
Wow. When you said you're going to think I'm crazy, I thought you were going to go on to Dwight Howard's really getting it this year.
No.
He can play three positions. Catch you.
I mean, Alex Caruso has this whole Billy Mack thing, right? I mean, that's total white man can't jump. Everybody loves Alex Caruso.
Everybody loves Alex Caruso, but I do feel that Dave's statement has the potential to be controversial.
He is actually good.
He uttered the words, I stand by AC.
Oh, God.
were uttered. But anyway, I do like their I like Jared Dudley. I think Jared Dudley will help them.
I don't think he's going to play a lot.
I agree. I think he'll help him a little bit. Okay. I mean, he can shoot. I like when they sign guys who can shoot.
Yes.
That was a big step forward for the Lakers.
He can shoot, Troy Daniels. He knows how to function very well in a team defensive system, and he's one of the best bench cheerleaders in NBA.
He's a good guy to have in the locker room.
Avery Bradley?
That's a TBD.
The whole he can shoot thing's kind of an issue there.
But the Lakers, in my mind, have two questions. One, to play their best, Anthony Davis should play center and LeBron should play power forward. Mm-hmm. They don't have to do that November 10th, but they do have to do that May 10th.
I'm going to say something crazy.
More crazy than Alex Caruso is the second most athletic Laker?
That's an illegal all its own. I think LeBron should play center.
Okay, fine. Depends on who they're playing against.
I mean, if you put Draymond Green and LeBron James standing next to each other, and Draymond plays that small ball five for the Warriors, how is that not a great role for LeBron when you match up against teams like the small ball teams?
Play center when he's on the floor with Anthony Davis. And really, when you're talking about matchups, centers,
why not?
No, they're never going to put a center on LeBron. You're not going to be able to create that matchup.
Well, I don't know, Dave, you guys have covered.
I could see the Sixers playing the Lakers in the playoff in the finals, and LeBron and Ben Simmons guarding each other mm-hmm. down the stretch of a game. Yeah. And you may be able to call them the centers, depending on what Embiid's doing.
And you say they don't necessarily have to start the season like that. My thing is they don't have to start games like that, but they need to finish games.
But the problem is that that's not what Anthony Davis and LeBron want to do. And the other problem is, again, will they be good enough defensively? I look at the Lakers and I think, boy, if everything goes right, this team wins 58 games, top four seed, put LeBron in a playoff series mm-hmm. and let it rip. But I can see it going sideways.
They just signed a multi-time defensive player of the year.
That's true. Four times, I think.
All right, Dave, are we going to handle the Dwight conversation?
I mean, I don't really want to go back. I've been in therapy for years since covering that season. But
I remember Gary Beatty, who was the former trainer there. Gary Beatty had this great line after that year. He said, "You know the thing about banging your head against a wall? It feels really good when you stop." Like at the end of that year.
Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star. I think it's the Toronto Star. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He said the Raptors played the Lakers early in the season, and he wrote, or he was like, you could write a novella out of each Laker locker room. Every game you could write a little novella about what was going on in that locker room.
But Dwight gets it again this year. 8 straight summer. He's finally got it.
Honestly, I don't even really want to talk about him, because if he does something, that's fine. If he doesn't, that's fine. He's their backup center right now.
It was actually, I had to say, considering where they were and the disappointment of DeMarcus Cousins, mm-hmm. to turn around and be able to bring a guy with the upside of that with a no-risk contract. They can get rid of him without mm-hmm. paying him other than the pro rate up till January 7th, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
To get him to agree to those terms, I think, is a smart move by the front office.
I know, but...
Look, it's like Dwight Howard Groundhog Day. We've heard this, right? Mm-hmm.
But those last 5 teams, he had a guaranteed contract.
I know. Honestly, I don't care.
Okay. I will be the one who will wade into this water. You can just pause. I know it's your podcast, but I'll just ISO here. I actually think that knowing everyone involved who has the long history with Dwight, who, I mean, basically signed him with their noses held, right? Like, they just had to grit their teeth and look at the evaluation. I've heard stories about how much better he looked than everyone else they looked at in that spot, how well he interviewed with the coaches, with players, the Anthony Davis, LeBron. Like, they just kind of didn't have a choice. Like, he was by far, and it's the way it's been relayed to me, he's just by far the best available player they could have got, and which says a lot for the league and its unending ability to get over just about anything. Like, I thought I saw everything when DeAndre Jordan signed with the Mavericks after that whole thing.
And that, boy, that went well. Great example.
The idea that Dwight Howard, after everything that
How
he
about
experienced
that he was,
in 2012.
That he was brought in to the Lakers under the tutelage and under the influence of team leader JaVale McGee.
Yes.
Don't
worry. Remember don't go well with Dwight. JaVale's there.
Remember the Good Sports Illustrated sign JaVale. That the apocalypse is upon us?
Yeah.
JaVale, I really worked closely with JaVale to, come on. This is where we're at. I've used this before and I'm going to use it again and I'm going to keep using it, I feel like, for the whole season. Some of you, if you listen to this podcast, you may have heard me say it. I'm sorry I'm saying it again. This guy who I really, really trust, I'll tell you who it is afterwards. He was in China, who's been around the NBA for a very long time, very, very powerful guy, said the Lakers can win the NBA title this year, but they have to run it like a great horse race. They can't come out too strong. Uh-huh. They can't come out too fast. They have to avoid falling and breaking their leg in the middle. They have to hit. They have to go to the whip at the right time. They have to have the finishing kick. So that means LeBron's got to be great. Anthony Davis got to be great. They've got to avoid major injury. They've got to maybe make a midseason acquisition, whether it's an Andre Iguodala addition or something like that. They've got to come together at the right time. Like, I can construct you a thing in the laboratory where they're going to do it, but it is going to be threading the needle. And that's what I think they're looking at this year. And if you look at the Clippers, to your point about their depth and their multiple layers of protection, and I like that terminology, plug and play. I don't think the Lakers have that luxury. So,
and you know, we get back to small market versus big market, buyout season, who do you think are going to be the teams that are at the top of every legit buyout guys list in terms of preferred destinations?
I know, that said, like...
Clippers, Lakers, and whatever world.
I know, but that said, like...
I think Clippers
some
first.
Guys sign with the Bucks. You know? Lots of teams wanted Kyle Korver. Where'd he go?
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, like...
I don't think Korver cares too much about the LA club scene, but yeah.
Well, Korver's grew up... You know, people say Korver's from Iowa. He's actually from LA. He lived here until he was 10. But anyway, so let's go up the coast. I am...
Someone in this room predicted the team up the coast is going to the finals. Am I right?
I think that was me.
Mm-hmm. You stand by that prediction?
Mm-hmm. They're 5-time Western Conference champions. It's the same team that won a historic amount of games, minus Andre Iguodala. That's a big minus.
Minus Klay Thompson.
Be back in February.
And will he be back to
March.
Being Klay Thompson?
I think so. I mean, look.
Minus Sean Livingston, minus Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
Minus some other.
Harrison Barnes. Holy.
He was on that 73 win streak.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Look, I just think they're the defending Western Conference champions 5 years in a row. You give them that respect. They still got Steph Curry. They still got Draymond Green. They still have the DNA of those great teams. And I kind of like some of their additions. I sort of like Willie Cauley-Stein on that team.
Willie Cauley-Stein was a smart ad. There's two big questions for the for the Warriors. One, when we get to December 15th, when free agents can be traded, are they looking to move D'Angelo Russell, or are they not even a conversation?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Boy, what a great trade.
Yeah.
He's fit in seamlessly. They're in fourth place. Mm-hmm. Steph's doing great. Draymond's doing great. He's an all-star candidate. Or are they like, boy, what's the D'Angelo Russell trade? That right there will be a big thing. And then secondly, what McMahon just said, which is, okay, forget about February, March. When we get to April,
yes.
Where is Klay?
Yeah. Can Klay be back in Klay Thompson form by the time the playoffs roll around? And if he is, they're absolutely a threat.
Yeah. I mean, I just think never underestimate the heart of a champion. And I will continue to say that about the Warriors. And like I would always say about LeBron when he was in Cleveland, like never underestimate the heart of a champion. He won a title. He willed his team to get there. And Dave, you saw that up close every single night there in Cleveland. I'm like, when he's on the court, you don't count him out.
I'll go back to the horse race analogy. There's going to be this pack of teams. Who's coming blitzing out at the end? It could be the Blazers. You know, it could be Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and Nurkic comes back.
A vote for continuity.
I mean, it could be the Rockets, could be the Jazz, could be the Nuggets.
Yep.
I'll talk about the Rockets in a minute.
There's legitimately seven teams who I think at least have a chance in the West.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
Ramona, have you ever been in need of a director of coffee?
Yes. I think that's called an intern or something. Like I get some unpaid labor to go get me get coffee.
No,
at Starbucks.
That's a coffee runner. This is a director of coffee.
Ah,
Cafe Altura's COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. Ramona, what did he do?
Did he have a contact? Did he have did he know somebody in the industry?
No, that would have taken way too long. He switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Ramona, Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants. Mm. Apparently there was a lot of applicants for director of coffee. It does kind of sound like a good job.
It feels kind of like a hipster job.
It's definitely a hipster job.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of hipsters who are... You know, studying their resumes.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's got to swipe through the hipsters, and that's ZipRecruiter. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 or 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate, hipster or not, within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes, and you can try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address. That's ZipRecruiter.com/collective. ZipRecruiter.com, and I'm going to spell it out for y'all. Collective, CollectiveCollectivE, ZipRecruiter.com/collective, because ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Director of Coffees.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
Let's talk about the Blazers real quick. This is a team that has been the number 2 seed the last 2 years. I can't tell you how disappointed I was in their performance in the Western Finals.
Yep.
Dame, for as great as he has been, the Warriors couldn't believe how easy he was to neutralize. Maybe he was tired, but they basically took away his pet plays, and he just stood over there. So 2 years ago, you know, coming into last year, Dame really improved his range,
mm-hmm.
which took away the teeth of the defense. This year he elected not to play for Team USA when he would have been the far and away, in my mind, would have been the far away star in mm-hmm. the entire World Cup. And, you know, there's some shoe issues there. He was treated poorly in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. There was some discussion on Team USA while I was over there that Dame came over to China as part of a Adidas promotional tour during the World Cup.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then he went down to Australia, which is also where
USA
went.
Yeah. The first loss occurred.
It was a different time. He went to Australia after China,
okay.
but
okay.
you know, he had made the comment that he wanted to focus on the.
Mm-hmm.
But Dame has a history of coming back strong. So the thing that I think really stood out was he didn't have that away from the ball game, and they didn't. And then also I'll point to the team; they didn't have the away from the ball package to take advantage of the way the Warriors decided to play them. That team came through the whole season with the number two seed. Executed. I thought they were in trouble against the Thunder. Just mm-hmm. thumped
lost
them.
Lost Nurkic to a gruesome
yeah.
injury,
right.
and
right.
you thought, well, so much for the Blazers.
Yep.
Neil O'Shea made great midseason moves to keep those guys rolling. They thumped the Thunder. Ended the Thunder.
As right? we know them,
yeah,
yes,
no, they obliterated.
Like
Oklahoma
I thought,
City.
I thought Oklahoma City might have won that series. It was just kill them
yeah. with the best playoff dagger we have ever seen.
Yeah, and so I was so disappointed in the way they, you know, they had the big lead in all four games. Golden State never sweated,
yeah,
took care
big
of
lead,
them.
Big lead, non-competitive
yep.
games.
So like on my hand, it's like on my hands. Like how do I respect? I respect the fact that you're the number two seed 2 years in a row. I mean, how do you not respect that? How do you not respect Dame? But then how do I look at them and say, boy, they're a contender. They can come out of that pack.
Yeah. Because they're not going to play one of the greatest teams ever assembled in the Warriors should they get
well,
to the...
That's a good answer.
Should I throw you the lob? I mean, are you seeing the lob that we're... You're not on the Hassan Whiteside bandwagon?
I'm not.
I mean, it does give them a different dimension than they've had in the past. He gives them I love this term, verticality. Right? There's a verticality that... Nah, I'm getting a thumbs down in there from Han. I like verticality. That's what the Warriors always used to say about JaVale. That's why
like
they would start JaVale.
I just don't like Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah.
I don't know. Especially at $27 million.
Supposedly, you know, there's a connection there with their stars, but...
They did bring Rodney Hood back to life last year, too.
They
Let's
did.
Bring that.
That was an amazing...
I will say yep. this. I do think Damian Lillard's style of leadership, I think Rodney Hood benefited tremendously from that, to where it's not... Let's just be honest. He wilted playing with LeBron. And...
Mm-hmm.
His career is resuscitated playing with mm-hmm. Damian Lillard. You know, I'm not saying Damian Lillard's a magician. I don't know if he can, you know, bring Whiteside back to life. But I do think he's legitimately one of the best leaders in the NBA.
They got Bazemore, too?
Yeah, that was the Evan Turner trade. It was just a straight-up swap there.
Who, you know, there's something there.
Well, they lost Al-Farouq Aminu.
Right.
Who...
Farouk Aminu and Harkless.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So...
And Harkless was good for them.
Yeah,
the
so, they lost some of their perimeter defense. So, getting Bazemore, in theory, should help all the... Bazemore... I don't even remember anything he did last year. I just remember he was on the trade market the whole year.
He started okay, and then there was a few little injuries, and then how much of that was injury, and how much of that was... We're going to trade you.
Yeah.
There was that stage. But I don't know. There's something to be said for continuity for teams that when you have a bunch of new duos and a bunch of new teams that are learning to play together, the team that has the most consistency, I'd probably put the Utah Jazz in that conversation as well. They're going to have to work in Conley, right?
Like Bogdanovich.
And Bogdanovich. So the teams that usually have the tightest core that knows how to play together, they jump out fast. Does that sustain? And I do like that the Blazers tried something different.
Yeah,
like they didn't just run it back with a team that got smoked in the Western Conference Finals.
Neil O'Shea attacked the roster to a certain extent. And he made a decision to let some guys walk, too. But I think highly of them. I just, again, wonder who's coming out of the pack. And maybe it's them.
Well, I remember that series early on. There was the first couple of games, they were close. And the Warriors rallied to win. And it was like, it just kind of like, if you're going to get the Warriors, you've got to throw a good opening punch. Like, you've got to get one at Oracle and take it back to Portland and with a little head of steam.
Or you could just fall down 3-1 and
there
beat them.
Yeah, well. Yeah. So, Houston.
You know what? It's funny.
Houston.
I want to hear. I want to hear McMahon.
You said teams with the most continuity. In some ways,
oh man,
really. In some ways, it's the Rockets, except for the one big wild card here, which obviously is Russ. But other than that, I mean, they brought back the rest of that core. Mm-hmm. I mean, look. Obviously, Russ and Harden have played together, but to me, and they've got this friendship that dates back to childhood. When they played together, James Harden was the sixth man of the year, not a perennial MVP candidate. It's a completely different situation.
I don't think it's relevant.
I agree.
Their relationship is relevant.
James Harden, now they're the two most ball-dominant stars in the league. So how is that going to work? I can give you the Rockets' perspective. I'm not saying I'm necessarily 100% on board with
it. All right.
What the Rockets will tell you, their hope, number one, is that Russ will get them playing a lot faster. Obviously, he's the best rebounding guard arguably ever. They were one of the slowest-paced teams in the league last season. Russ grabbing the rebound and going brings them a completely different element. They hope that's going to happen a lot. In terms of spacing, look, Russ has to actually give a crap when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. Okay, he can't just spot up there and, you know, have teams dare him to shoot threes because he's a poor three-point shooter. James Harden has to give a crap when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. You know, he has to actually care about spacing when he's not touching the ball. They have to make that commitment. But James Harden doesn't necessarily need great spacing to get to his go-to move.
Absolutely
his go-to, not. He can create space. It's funny to me. Like, he'll catch the ball over there. Kind of in the corner, a guy will be all over him, and I'll say he's about to get off a step back three, and he'll do it almost every single
time. You know what I often think when I watch James Harden? Like, you watch boxing? You a boxing fan?
Not particularly.
You know how there's certain boxers who are really good fighters inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
When they're in close, that's actually where they operate best. Like, that's kind of the way I feel like with Harden. He just really knows how to use his body to create whatever space he needs because he's never had to have space. Like, he's never been able to blow past guys or jump over them.
No,
that's not his game.
He's maybe the best we've ever seen at being able to just create his own little space. He's got those long arms.
Yep.
You know, he's got the little.
It's like old man game. I hate to say it. I don't want to say it like in a diminishing way because he's an MVP candidate
and
every
then,
single
you
year.
Know, the step back three is a shot that you want 99% of the players in the world to take. And that's the shot that he's looking for.
And he can shoot it off either foot. He can shoot it.
Now he can shoot it off
direction.
One foot.
Yep.
You know, that's what he worked on this summer.
Yeah. Right.
Let me ask you this.
But I don't think we're going to get an answer on just how well that duo works until late May.
What is the most important thing for the Rockets franchise and has been for a very long time? What statistical measure? Not even statistical measure. What do they look for in a player? What is their focus on as an organization?
Efficiency.
That's right.
Yeah, and they just signed one of the most inefficient. Now, the other thing they will say about Russ is he's been surrounded by some of the worst, you know, like OKC's been a terrible shooting team for years.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel like, okay, we're going to surround this guy with shooters now. The floor is going to be more open for Russ than it has been probably ever in his career, certainly much more so than the last few years. So they're hoping that Russ will flourish with shooters. You know, Russ is going to run the second unit, right?
Is it the lack of shooters that is the reason that Russ all of a sudden is shooting 20% less on free throws?
So I heard something about this. I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast with the guy who wrote Boomtown. I don't know if you heard that one. And he has this theory that part of the reason why Russ's free throw percentage has dropped off is because the NBA, he had this little
free throw routine
that he used to do, and the NBA changed the rules to kind of speed up the game, and he's not able to do his routine again.
He would walk out to half court, I believe, and then walk
and
in between free throws.
Yeah.
His routine is going to be completely different because his team is different, the franchise is different, the city is different, so that'll be interesting.
Well, look, I'm just going to tell you that Russell Westbrook over the last 2 years has had a stunning drop in efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, even more so. Like, last year, I mean, 2 years ago when he won the MVP, he had one of the highest PERs in the history. Well, not one of the highest. He had the number one PER in the NBA.
I mean, he was an illegitimate MVP according to the Rockets.
I'm ignoring Daryl Morey's public relations.
I'm going to be the psychological profiler. Okay. For his entire, basically his most of his career, Russell Westbrook played for a franchise that was built for him and by him, right? Built around him. Everyone was, it was, you know, he was a founding member, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a period when it was him and Kevin Durant,
mm-hmm.
and it was very clear those two and James Harden was the sixth man. But once Kevin Durant left, this was all about Russ. Like, you know, when you went to Oklahoma City, that was his locker room, that was his franchise, everyone there was about Russ. When you go to Houston, it is all about James Harden.
You know what, though? I will say this for Russ. Last year, first half of the season, when Paul George was fully healthy mm-hmm. and a legit MVP candidate, Russ clearly was more than willing to kind of, I'm not going to say take a complimentary role, but to ride shotgun a lot.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so he goes to Houston knowing he's riding
shotgun. Well, he did that with Durant.
Yeah.
I mean, he was Robin and Durant was Batman.
Yeah.
But, you know, Durant won the MVP first. It was, right. He was the scoring champ. Like, he was.
Well, he's back in the, he's Robin again. And he knows he's riding shotgun. And the reason that trade happened is because Russ and Harden wanted it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm not so concerned about the personal dynamics. I'm really, you know, to me, that's not a concern at all. It's just the basketball fit that's the concern.
Okay. So Russ, though, is a guy who is famously into his routines. He eats the same peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? Like, he's got everything. He's got his timing down on game day down. Everything has to be the way he does it for him to feel good. Now, there's a lot of, it reminds me a little of Clayton Kershaw, right? There's in baseball, like, they have their routines. You don't mess up his routine. If you see him walking through the clubhouse at a certain time when it's pitching day, do not stop and talk to him. Do not say hello. It'll mess his whole vibe up. So, you're going to a franchise now that's you have no experience with. They're not used to your routines. They're not used to you. How do we feel that Russ does with a disruption in his routines, in the way things are?
Based on his shooting percentages, it's a routine for failing him the last couple of years. So
I'm telling you, if I put his numbers blindly on the board, mm-hmm. and I showed you the numbers from the last three seasons, efficiency, free throw percentage, field goal percentage, especially three-point percentage, free throw attempts, which are down because he doesn't want to go to the basket as much mm-hmm. because he's not shooting mm-hmm. as much. And then I matched up with what his salary was. That would be a concerning – that would be red flag city.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not in a vacuum. They traded away one of the worst contracts in the NBA to get him and also picks, but they did upgrade there. I'm just saying Russell Westbrook is displaying – there's a reason why the Thunder were like, let's mm-hmm. consider going a different direction here.
But is this Daryl Morey moving away from all the principles that he had been about?
No, because,
the stage in his career?
Because as much as Morey's analytics, he is a superstar hunter.
Yeah.
Always yep. has been. And not just a superstar hunter, a big name hunter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he went and hunted Melo last year, despite the fact that, you know, I mean, you talk about.
Yep.
Concerns about how
he's trying to get LeBron in the
fit.
Past. He's
yeah,
trying to
I
get,
mean, every time, you know,
Jimmy Butler.
I mean, every time there's a superstar
Howard,
or even a former superstar out there, the Rockets are going to go hunting. And Daryl Morey will, and then, you know, Tillman Fertitta, their owner, is the same type of personality in that way.
So what's interesting is, you know, you've seen this with the Rockets over the last couple of years. Mike D'Antoni, who was 7 seconds or less, the ball finds energy, totally changed. That's a little too far to go totally change. But
no,
the Mike D'Antoni that I see now and the way that his team plays is very different than the Phoenix Mike D'Antoni.
And what D'Antoni will say is he's all about efficiency. And if James Harden dribbling 20 times and getting up a step back three is one of the most efficient plays in basketball, then he's all for it.
All right, here's all I'm going to say. I don't want to hear any talk about any awards or any bias or anything. It was 2-2. Durant was in the locker room,
mm-hmm.
and the Rockets had the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was 3-2 in an elimination game on your home court.
Yep.
Steph Curry goes scoreless in the first half, and you lose that game.
And then absolutely dominated the fourth quarter in your house to say farewell.
I don't want to hear any of their crap. I don't want to hear
it. See, that's biased by you. That's biased by – this is exactly what they're talking about, Wendy.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear any complaining
about
officiating.
And by the way, my thing is this – the bias against James Harden, he's been top two in MVP votes.
I know. I've voted him for MVP several times.
Where if it's biased against James Harden, why does he keep getting so many damn votes?
I don't want to hear it. After what happened.
Yep.
And in that game, And by the way, go ask the Warriors.
Yep.
One of their most proud moments of the last five years of winning that series. Okay, maybe not first or second. They have their titles, but they were so proud to win that series.
Oh, they enjoyed it. They
were proud to win it, but also the way they won it.
For sure.
I mean, that was, and I remember, that was, Steve Kerr was, what was the soccer team he was talking about?
The effing Giants.
Yeah.
Liverpool. Liverpool.
I mean, that was like of their championship run in the last 5 years. I really think that was one of their most proud series victories.
Well, especially because they heard all year, if Chris Paul didn't pull his hammy, and they got sick and tired of hearing that crap.
They got sick and tired of a lot of things from Chris Paul.
And to spin it forward, that's Exhibit A.
That does not make them unique.
If for those who want to say Steph could be MVP again this year or win a scoring title, look at what he did that game. I mean, that's a stark reminder of what he
scored 33 in the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, Harden had good numbers in the last couple games of that series, but he did not impact.
Well, look, Harden, I do think, and obviously the Spurs finale a few years ago is an exception. Mm-hmm. That's the lowest moment in his career. I do think the Harden's a playoff choker is a narrative that is out of control. But at this point, he is proven himself to be a historically elite talent, and so what's left? He has to elevate his team to a championship. He's been really good in playoffs, not as efficient as he is in regular season, whatever. He has not had that run like Dirk Nowitzki did in 2011 to legitimize himself as an all-time great of the all-time greats, where he just puts his team on his back. I'm the best player in the world. I'm carrying this team to a championship. That's the only thing missing from his career at this point.
And here's the question. Is that because he's flat out tired at the end of those games and at the end of those series, which is why you go get a Russell Westbrook to say, okay, or a Chris Paul before that to see if that was the experiment that would work. But I think that's the thinking on it, is this a character flaw in James Harden that he cannot win in those
spots? I don't know if it's
spots,
a character flaw.
Or is it simply that he's just tired because he's been carrying everybody?
I don't know if
everybody.
It's a character flaw. I think the flaw is the Rockets complaining about not getting calls and or awards when they're holding it in their hands and don't deliver. We're running out of time, so I want to talk about the Jazz. The Jazz had one of the biggest summers in the history of their organization.
For sure.
Would you argue that Bojan Bogdanović is the biggest free agent they've ever signed?
I mean, I'd have to look. Boozer would be the only other.
Oh, that's right. Boozer.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Right?
Yeah, let's not go open that can of worms. You're right. Boozer. Uh-huh. You're right. You're right.
And then Mike Conley is one of the biggest trades they've ever pulled off. And the thing about it is, both of those guys, I think, fit so well with the core that they have coming back. They had to take some pressure off Donovan Mitchell. He couldn't be, you know, clearly far and away the only guy who could go, you know, who could get buckets. And Conley can run an offense. He can play off the ball.
Yeah.
He's a very good defensive player. He's a great locker room guy. He could not be a better fit with Donovan Mitchell. Derek Favors was the best backup center in the league. You can't pay $17 million for that, and you can't have to shoehorn him into a starting lineup that belongs in the 90s with him at power forward. So they had to move on from Derek Favors, who I think, by the way, is a great addition for the Pelicans, and modernize the way that they're playing. They went from a very mediocre shooting team to bringing in Conley and Bogdanović. They have a chance to be an elite
and Bogdanović
shooting team.
Is an excellent three-point shooter.
Nails.
Big-time competitor at both ends.
And can put the ball on the floor more than people think.
Not a great athlete, but...
But he has size and knows how to use it. Yeah. He's a physical guy.
Yeah.
So here's what I think people forget about Mike Conley, because he's sort of been, you know, the great grind era has been over for a while now. That guy in the playoffs, we forget when he broke his face and then came back to play. Remember that? I mean, like, he is a different player when you put him in an actual real game.
He is.
When he's not just playing
for
whatever.
He is maybe the nicest guy in the NBA and one of the toughest guys in the NBA, which makes him perfect for Utah.
And Gobert is at the top of his game, two-time defending defensive player of the year. If you watch what he did to Team USA.
Heck of a summer.
And by the
best
way, the
player on the court.
The improvement in shooting, he's going to benefit tremendously from that because he is arguably the best pick-and-roll big man in the league right now.
21 points, 16 boards, 3 blocks, and like a whole other intimidations.
Yeah, just don't watch Argentina after that.
That was Luis Scola got him. But
and a good summer, like, beyond that, I mean, those are big enough moves, but, you know, why Justin Zanuck and company could be up for executive. I mean, adding guys like Ed Davis and, and Jeff Green, there's like smart moves throughout the
Yeah,
the
Ed Davis is critical because he's not as good as Favors, but you still have a really solid backup big.
And believe it or not, those were Conley related because Ed Davis and Jeff Green were with Conley in Memphis.
Oh, right.
And that was a connection there. And look, Utah has never been a major, you know, they haven't won these battles for free agents. There were other teams that wanted Ed Davis, other teams that wanted Jeff Green. And
even a flyer like Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yeah. In talking to the Jazz, which I have done this summer, they believe that Mudiay, they think they may have something in Mudiay.
It's an upside play. It's a no-risk upside play.
But I will say this, like, and we'll talk about Denver here real quick. I know we didn't get to like the Pelicans and Mavericks, but we've got all season. To me, you know, again, we talk about the pack. They're built to come out of the pack.
They've got a chance.
So
their best chance since Stockton Malone. I think you can safely say that.
Fair point. So Andrew doesn't like when I talk about the World Cup, but at the World Cup, Nikola Jokic was not exactly an impressive.
He was benched in one game.
I'll still take my chances with that guy on my NBA team.
Their coach resigned afterwards. They finished fifth, and their coach resigned moments after they finished fifth. Jokic was not in midseason form.
Or maybe he was. Yeah, or maybe he was.
I don't know. We'll see. He sort of ebbs and flows in his interest level, but obviously he also made a couple of plays during the World Cup that would jaw dropped.
And if we're going to give points of continuity, I mean, certainly Denver has that as well going for them.
And Michael Porter Jr. is the big wild card there, a major talent. And I tell you what, I thought the Jeremy Grant trade was a great addition for them, just giving them, you know, some athleticism, some versatility, another really solid role player. I mean,
good 3-and-D type guy, which are hard to find.
Who can also, you know, get out in transition, finish.
And you know, Denver has not always had the most shooting ever, and Porter is. This is supposedly what I mean. You know, I haven't really seen him play that much, but in talking to people in Denver, they're excited about his 3-point shooting.
Yeah,
they think that he will be a real floor stretcher at the four. And you know, when they had to decide between bringing Millsap back, I think that their vision is to have him and Millsap sort of hold down that spot in transition there.
And then the biggest question to me about the Nuggets in terms of can they be legitimate contenders is that really good young backcourt, can that become a great young backcourt? Can those guys take kind of the next step in their development? Or, I mean, they need to take another step for the Nuggets to emerge out of a loaded West.
Yeah, and, you know, in that series with Portland, I think there were times, you know, they had that epic – was a triple overtime? Was
quadruple.
Four overtime. Oh, my God. I remember watching that in Houston.
We had brisket that night.
We did. Did we?
Yes, we did.
Like hours before that game ended. Hours and hours and hours. You know, they need one of those guys to become a game breaker, a game winner, because just like in Philly with Embiid, it's very hard at the end of playoff games. You know, Steve Kerr gave an interview to The Athletic where he was very eloquent in talking about, you know, Kevin Durant, it was perceived to take a shot at the Warriors because he said, you know, you can't play motion offense at the end of games. And it was perceived as a shot at Kerr. And I think Anthony Slater talked to Kerr, and Kerr said, no, Kevin's right. You have, at the end of in the later stage of the playoffs, you have to have great isolation players. That's why Michael Jordan and LeBron and all these guys are great. And I agree with
James
that.
James Harden, whoops.
And I think, I think Denver still needs to find that player, and that's a factor for them too. But again, they're going to be in that pack. They're going to be in that pack. And the thing about the West, and we're going to wrap it up here because we're out of time, but New Orleans is dangerous. Oklahoma City, I'm not ruling out, not necessarily as any sort of contender, but they get to play 41 games at home, and they have some good players. And they're going
to
win games.
Spurs have been in the playoffs 22 straight years and get back a young talent, DeJounte Murray, who's got a chance to be really exciting.
So there's 10 teams that realistically think they should be in the playoffs, right?
I would say more than 10.
More than 10?
I just named seven. We consider contenders, and then I'm going to say San Antonio, New Orleans, Dallas, Sacramento.
Yep.
Sacramento.
I don't think OKC necessarily wants to be in the playoffs.
But they're going to beat some teams.
Yeah, they are.
They're not going to be Minnesota.
And then they're going to try really hard to
Minnesota's
move some pieces.
Minnesota's going to going to – well, I'm not saying they're going to make the
– But they think of themselves as a team
And I'm going to tell you something else.
The two that don't are Memphis and Phoenix. Well, maybe Phoenix does.
Let me tell you something about Phoenix. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs. Yeah. I thought they were going to be better last year, and they ended up not being. But they finally got a point guard. They finally got a point guard. And I'm not saying he's going to the Hall of Fame, but he was just the MVP of the World Cup. Yep. I know I'm not allowed to talk about the World Cup, but I keep violating Andrew's rules. And I think what?
Did you know Wendy went to China?
All right, he's saying we're too long anyway.
Well, I just don't understand how Andrew Hahn, with the man bun, does not have a special kinship with Ricky Rubio. And the man bun.
Point.
I mean, isn't that – that should be like your guy.
Hahn's death stare is amazing right now.
Like, you should be all aboard the Ricky Rubio train.
I think Sacramento has six or seven really quality players, and I think Phoenix will be better. All right, we got to go. Thank you, Ghost Hoop Collective. We'll be in the season really soon here. Everybody will be with their teams, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Peace.